Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Everybody, a warm welcome to Voice Rising. We are very fortunate today because I have in studio with me the songstress, the yogi, and the educator, wonderful voice teacher, also Simrit Kaur, and we are going to be diving into sound consciousness, mantras, and the power of words. So welcome, Simrit, to the show, and thanks for being with me here today.
Thank you, Kara, for having me. It's so nice to be here.
Yeah. So I would like to start. I've had really the honor to dive deeply into your music the last few weeks and discover even more layers. And I'd like to start with a question that brings us back to your childhood. I understand that you were born in Greece and that yes. You come from a very long lineage of Greek female singers. Your great-grandmother, I believe, is the beloved Greek singer Tula Demetriou.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
And your biological mom was also a singer. And then yeah. I think that you were adopted at a very young age from a wonderful Greek Orthodox family in the States and grew up in America. Is that all? Did I get that all right?
It's all true. Yes.
Wow. Fantastic. What a journey.
Yeah, it is a journey. It still is a journey. I mean, I went back to Greece. I've been going to Greece since I was a little kid. My parents mm-hmm. have always been bringing us back. And I also have a brother who was adopted from Greece, but from a totally different family. So none of us are blood related. And it really made for a very unique, special, and interesting learning experience growing up, you know.
Right.
Yeah, we were really fortunate to be raised in a really rich Greek culture growing up, so I think that was really fortunate for both my brother and I. And, you know, both of my parents are first-generation Greeks, so their parents came from the boat through Ellis Island and mm-hmm. immigrated here to the United States. So both of my parents raised us with a very, very rich Greek culture, and we grew up, you know, Greek dancing, cooking Greek food, listening to Greek music every day, day in and day out, traditional
nice.
Greek folk music and all of that kind of stuff, and going to the church, you know, a few days a week at least. So we were in Greek school and, you know, all that kind of stuff, Greek dancing. And everything was really centered around our culture. And
right.
I feel really
right.
fortunate to have had that experience being adopted into the States, because I know that some people have a different experience with that, you know, when they're adopted from a different country. So
right. So the roots were still very much there, that you could really anchor into the Greek culture. You didn't
yeah.
have to
oh, yeah.
to leave Greece as a child. And then, I mean, it's also wonderful, but come into a totally different maybe church situation or right.
So, yeah, just a totally yeah. different culture without, you know, my roots. I think that would have been
mm-hmm.
really hard growing, like, as I got older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're younger, sometimes you don't think about it. It's not as big of a deal to maybe a young child, at least consciously
right.
it's not
right.
as big of a deal. But once you
yeah.
start to get older, I think that, you know, everyone does want to know about their roots, and it's important. It's important to us. There's something there, and like you You know, we're just saying, I come from a lineage of Greek women singers, and right. I was fortunate enough to be able to meet my biological mother this past year. We went last
nice.
Year as well. I wasn't yeah. able to meet her then, but I was able to meet her this past year, and it was beautiful. We were able to sing together, and it was quite special. And my great-grandmother was a very beloved singer and actress. Her name was Tula Dimitriou, like you said, and I got to see mm-hmm. pictures of her crossover. But I never got to meet her. She just recently passed away, and I was bummed I didn't get to meet her, but I did get to see some pictures and hear some beautiful sounds from her voice. So that was really special. When I got to meet my biological mother, she showed me some pictures and told me some stories, and so it was really, really special.
Beautiful. So the other thing that fascinates me is that you're also very famous for these wonderfully ornate headdresses, right? So people that see pictures of you or have been in your concerts, they know how fabulous these headdresses look. And and you've also been known to say in interviews that you feel often a bit eccentric. So what is for you the definition of eccentricity, and how are you... You know, why do you feel so drawn towards it? I mean, I love it. I'm eccentric myself, so I'm just curious as to the joy that you have for creating these wonderful creations that, yeah, are sitting on top of your head while you sing. Exactly.
Thank you. Well, I will say, first and foremost, they're very comfortable. I won't wear anything on top of my head that doesn't feel comfortable, that I can't mm-hmm. move in and that I can't wear for, you know, 2.5 hours. So, because a lot of people ask me, are they heavy? Are they uncomfortable? And they're not. It's not like wearing nothing. Of course, I feel it. It's not like wearing a felted hat or anything. I definitely feel something on my head, but they're very comfortable, and they're usually not more than a couple of pounds at most.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with different artists to help me create them in such a way. And I simply love the art of it, and that was the desire, was, you know, the original desire was, gosh, I mean, they're so beautiful. I didn't necessarily see another artist doing this, and I just felt like I wanted to do it. It was more, I just started to think about it, and the reason I had the inspiration for the particular designs that I wear, some of them are exact replicas and some of them are not, but they come from my ancient lineage in Greece. And the
oh.
one that I, yeah, the one that I just wore in particular, with, it was made of the mane, was real horse hair that I collected from mm-hmm. my friend's horses. And mm-hmm. it's got the long tail in the back, and it's the Athena, the goddess Athena of war's head crown. Mm-hmm. And so I was working with a local artist here in town to create that, and I was really fortunate to be able to gather real horse hair from my friend's mm-hmm. four horses mm-hmm. at her farm. And it's a very humane process. It's just like cutting human hair. It's not like you have to do anything serious, you know, so to the horses. But I did, mm-hmm. we did ask the horses, and of course my friend was very into it. She was excited about it. I asked her, and after I approached her, I asked her as well, like, what do the horses love? What can I offer them in exchange besides holding them in my prayers when I sing? And she said, well, they love apples and carrots. so I brought a bunch of apples and carrots over, and we had a sweet, you know, a sweet session with the horses. It was really nice. And I love the creative process of making the headdresses. I don't make them all myself. Sometimes I work with other artists that make them out of town. Sometimes mm-hmm. I work with artists locally, and I do help make them. But I can't take credit for each and every one of them as far as, like, making them with my hands. Only a few of them I can take credit with helping making them with my hands with somebody else. So, you know, they're inspired. I had a vision, It was really interesting. One day I had a vision. The first headdress I wore with flowers and these kind of like, there were like these big alpaca pom-poms that came down over my neck and these, this big like ring of flowers, like this flower crown. I just had a vision of that. And I wanted to look more into it. Why am I having this vision of these headdresses? And, you know, you all, as an artist, you always, not question things to the point of not doing them necessarily, or at least that's how I work. But I was digging into why I was having these visions of these crowns. And then the more that I looked into my lineage, the more that I started to see these kinds of crowns, and I started to relate my artistic vision to my ancient Greek lineage as well. And I really drew a lot of the inspiration from those crowns that I saw. So the one that I wore last year, it had these beautiful feathers in the back, and it was really ornate. It was gold, and different shades of gold. And that one was the crown of Hermes. And it was just, it wasn't the exact crown or exact replica like this one was that I did for this year for the Athena crown, but it was inspired by that. And so there, it looked like it, and the people from Greece knew what it was, but if you didn't know what it was just, you know, it still was really cool and artistic and ornate. And that's what I love about these headdresses, is they're incredibly artistic. I love really interesting art that's off the beaten path. I've always been drawn to that. I've always been drawn to things that aren't predictable, that make me think, that, you know, show me a different perspective, and that are really beautiful. And that's how I feel about these headdresses. So.
They are gorgeous, and I thought it might have come. I think it's so fascinating that it comes from your Greek lineage, and now that you share it with us, I see a lot of the other headdresses that I know from Greece. I know that you grew up chanting in the Greek Orthodox Greek Orthodox Church, and at some point you chose the path of Kundalini yoga. And in Kundalini yoga, some of us know this and others might not, but they often wear white turbans. So I thought it was just a natural development of, wow, so many white turbans out there, I'm going to think of a new way to to cover my head.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, I can see how you think that. And you know, because I grew up in the church and I grew up chanting as a young child, and I was in the church choir as a young child, and I was studying Byzantine music as a young child, and the system of Byzantine music and how it works, and the different modes in the music and the different chord progressions and what they do and all that kind of stuff is very, very similar to chanting in different traditions. I felt that it was feeling that feeling that I felt when I was singing in the choir is a similar feeling that I get when I'm chanting other mantras in the Kundalini world from the Kundalini tradition. It's not different to me. The difference is the words, but even the words are so easy. They came easy for me because of my Greek, because of the Greek language, and because of the old Greek that I sang in as well and studied, and I know the Greek language. I read and write fluently in Greek, and I learned Gurmukhi, which is the language of the chants that are in the Kundalini yoga tradition, which come from the northwest tip of India. And I also read and write in that language, and I've been studying that language for a decade now. I'm not saying I'm perfect at any of the languages, including English, but what I am saying is that knowing Greek really, I think, enabled me to learn Gurmukhi really quickly. I learned it pretty fluently in 4 weeks, and that was really wild, because some of my friends who were also learning the language were like, whoa, what happened? How did this happen? And sometimes I think that we all have a destiny with something, and it comes into our life, and this particular language and chanting these mantras in this language, I have a destiny with, and I believe that's why it came the way it did into my life. And I believe that when I was chanting as a young child in the Greek church, it really set me up for all of this, because I don't chant in Greek, but it really feels so similar to what I did when I was a child. And my melodic sensibilities definitely, most definitely come from the, you know, the traditional Greek folk music and the ancient Byzantine music that I studied growing up. So it's not that I'm singing in Greek. It's not that I'm doing Greek chants. But that's all inside of me, and that all has influenced my melodic sensibility and with the music. It's all influenced. It's just influenced me in ways that I know that I'm not even conscious of. And so with the turban and everything, you know, it wasn't that I felt, oh, I don't want to wear a turban. And there's not that many people out there wearing turbans doing this. It's just that I just wasn't really, I wasn't resonating with it, you know, anymore like I was in the past. So I'm the type of person that naturally is comfortable saying, okay, like that's not something that I'm, you know, it's just not a big deal. You know, I feel it inside of myself. I feel the essence of the path of Kundalini Yoga. And there are no rules that say that when you practice Kundalini Yoga, you always have to wear a turban every day of your life. You know, I was just really wanting to do that for a while, and I did. And then when I wasn't feeling that anymore, I'm still a daily Kundalini Yoga practitioner. I also teach Kundalini Yoga, and I wear a turban when I teach. Because Yogi Bhajan, who brought Kundalini Yoga to the West, was the one that said, hey, we have to cover our heads when we teach this lineage. This is part of the lineage, and of course I respect that. But when I'm giving a concert, I really like it to reflect the deep creativity that lives inside of me. And so I like that to be reflected in the venue and the lighting and the way that I'm dressed and the music that I play. And
I love it. Beautiful. Let's take a short station break, and we're celebrating your eccentricity, your beauty, your originality. I'm in studio with Simrikar, and we're going to take a few minutes for our sponsors and be back for you very soon.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Namaste, friends. This is Deva Pramal and Mitten. And we want to let you know that we will be in America and Canada this May. We'll be coming with our Wings of Mantra World Tour, coming up the West Coast to Boulder, Santa Fe, Sedona, Scottsdale, Santa Barbara, L.A., Marin, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Escondido, Edmonds, and up to Canada to Victoria and Vancouver. You can find details on our website, devapramalmiten.com. Hope to see you there. Lots of love. Namaste.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
Why is the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm Kara Johnstad, and with me today in studio is Simri Kaur. And we were talking a lot about eccentricity, about originality, creativity, about the power also of language, of the language that Simrit is chanting in. And I want to dive into also more of your work in this second part of our show. And Simrit, you did a live track. It's called Guru Ram Das. And this is a mantra known for its miraculous healing qualities and for imparting humility to the one who chants it. Would you like to share a few words about this special recording that we're going to hear?
Oh, yes, it's one of my favorite chants and melodies that I do. It's beautiful in its simplicity, and it's also very... this recording is really, it gets really big, and it's really vast. And wow, we recorded this, I believe this one was in Montreal a few years, or 2 years ago. And something just opened up in me while I was chanting it, which happens very often. I have like a flush of energy that comes through me, and I feel that it's a divine energy that comes through. I can't explain it in words. And that's what happened in this. And it moves my lips. It takes me. It's something that animates me in many ways during the song or during the chant. And so, yeah, we recorded this. And I'm glad we got it. We were recording every concert on that tour. And I heard it, and I just knew that I really needed to share it with my fans and all the people. So
beautiful. So let's take a listen. This is Guru Ram Das live.
Thank you.
Guru Ram Das Live by Simrit Kaur. Excellent track. I can imagine that it was like a transmission that came through listening to
it
this
was.
Track.
Yeah, it was. And it's such a long track. It was just about to get to the chant part, but all of that came before the chant. It was really interesting. And I just, a lot of times that kind of stuff happens in the music with me, and I let it fly, you know, because that's how it comes through me. And so I really, I have to listen to it. Otherwise, if I don't, then the song doesn't have the, you know, it's like either I try to control that and then it becomes, the song becomes really manipulated, or I let it go like that and it becomes what it is. And it's a very, very beautiful process. So
I think the difference is, I'm sure you can either have a set list and have your 8 songs, or you can really do an energy field, a Buddha field happening, right? You can create, and when the energy is in deep flow, then you have the musicians and the voice and the messages that are able to go with the energy that is being created. And that's an incredible gift, because that's not, you know, a playlist anywhere, right? We a song can be, it reminds me of the one Genesis album that was 45 minutes long, one song.
Oh,
that is also truth. It can happen, right? Your sound is hailed as hauntingly hypnotic and majestic, and your music has topped the music charts. So tell me what defines your signature sound.
Where to find it?
No, what defines it? You know, every singer has something very special. We know that as singers, right? We know every singer carries something very magical, and if we're lucky, we have our own signature sound or vibration that is there, our essence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what defines yours? Are you?
I know that the incredible depth in the voice and the sound. The sound is very, it's very big. It has a very vast sound. My particular bandmates that I've hand-selected, and I have been playing together for many years, and there's something that is created with our sound that is like no other, that's out there doing the mantras, and also that's out there doing music. We have a very unique combination in energy together, and it's a very deep sound. It's got a very rhythmic pulse. So it's got a lot of depth, but it's also very etheric.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a touch, you know, well, I don't like to label the music because it doesn't really quite fit into a genre, which is really interesting. People try to put their finger on it, but it's hard for them to say, oh, it's like this or this or this. But there is a psychedelic element to it, not in the common sense of what psychedelic music is like. It's not like, oh, this is like, ooh, you know, but it's trancey. It just really takes you into a psychedelic space, and a lot of people mention that, and a lot of people really feel their life change when they hear, especially when they come to a live concert, but also when they hear the albums. But I would say that there's a quality in my voice, because I've heard this so many times. Growing up, you don't think about it because it's just what you do. But there is a quality of my voice that has a very, very penetrating, it just has a very, very penetrating effect on people. It's a very clear voice. It's, you know, I've always known I have a very clear voice, but especially as I get older, that's so many people say that. Oh, my God, it's so clear and so, like, it just penetrates. And I think that's what the music does, too, and the vibe of the music. It penetrates, and it also really takes you deep. Doesn't mean that it's all so easy and light, but it does take you really deep, and it elevates you. And I know that a lot of music does that for me, too. That's the only kind of music I like to listen to. But there is a quality of the music that's extremely penetrating, and people say that very often, and that comes through in the voice as well, as you just heard. It's a quality that sounds like, how do you can't do that with an effect. It's the sound of my voice, and I've even had people tell me that I should try to curb that, I had a Kundalini yoga teacher about almost 10 years ago that was like, you should curb that, you should try to like make it more, you should try to put more air in it. And I'm like, that's just not how it comes through. So,
well, as a vocal coach, I would say that is actually the sound that we know as singers regenerates also our instrument, that we can sing for hours and hours because of that clarity. The voice has the ability to penetrate and to go deeply into the bodies of other people and into our own body. And the sound of air passing through the chords, this is a interesting sound, right? But it's not a place where the voice does well for really chanting and singing concerts for a long, long time. So as long as it's free, right? And you hear in your voice this, the beauty of freedom. I mean, when I hear the tracks, there is a deep rootedness and at the same time a lot of height and a lot of expansiveness. And I think that, if we can kind of use that for me, if I have my spirituality, if I mean, it's the same thing. I would like to have a practice that is very deeply rooted, that allows me to fly while I'm standing on solid ground and is very expansive and at the same time comes to that point. And as a fellow singer-songwriter and as a vocal coach, that still point is the voice, is right centered between the heart and our mind, and right, it's a very quiet still point that we have, and then we are balancing between sound and silence, and that is a great gift. So I'm happy that you didn't take the advice of anybody telling you to change your sound, and that you continue to give that gift of also clarity and depth. And we can also be clear and not be hard, right? I think that's a great gift also to learn from voices, that we can be clear with our messages, right? And sing them clearly, right?
For sure.
Exactly.
That's the big thing for me, is that I want to honor the sound of my soul, and that's the voice. The voice is the sound of the soul, and when we try to manipulate it so much, then we're really cutting out the soul of the experience for ourselves and other people. So that's why I prefer not to use things like an auto-tune or like these interesting effects on the voice. I do love a reverb and stuff like that that expands the sound and stuff like that, but I choose specifically not to use certain vocal effects because I feel, and like I said, I do love like delays and reverbs and stuff like that, but I'm speaking of effects that really manipulate the sound of the voice and that cause it to sound different,
The reverb is actually not an effect. People think it's an effect. The reverb is putting us in a natural place that we would feel at home in a cathedral.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes,
or in a stairwell or in the shower. I mean, that's where the voice actually is at home. And when we're using microphones, we need reverb to bring us back to the nature, actually, to a beautiful tunnel or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Because even outside, there's a natural reverb. And when when we sing through a microphone, it's like a dead sound. It's not natural, actually. So, yes, it's for me, and it sounds like for you, too. It's extremely important for me to be able to hear some reverb on the voice so that I feel it, like, puts me in the zone.
The bigger the bigger the voice, the more we need reverb because it's the reflection, right? That is, we are used to being in big spaces.
Yes,
and
you got
we have to forgive all the sound engineers that don't understand that.
Oh my God, it's so nice to talk with you about that. I feel like I could talk to you for hours just about this, because I do have a very strong voice. It's yeah. penetrative, but it's also, it's not a soft voice. It is a big voice. I do have a big sound.
Great.
And it's exactly what I've mentioned to them. Like, this needs a very, I need to have an expansive sound around this because, mm-hmm. like you said, yeah. if I was in a cathedral, I wouldn't need to be mic'd. I would just sing, and that
right.
would naturally be happening.
Yeah.
And there's something that is important about that reverb on the sound of my voice, and it's and on the sound of any voice, I feel, even in a small amount or whatever, because, like you said, it puts it in its natural environment. Otherwise,
it's very sterile.
It's sterile without it.
It puts it in the natural environment, and I also have a very big voice. And you need a lot of length between those reverbs, a lot of length between the reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a little break again. We're going to be back with Simran Kaur talking about sound consciousness, sound. Of course, all these great engineers that accompany us on tours, and just life of being a mantra singer and a singer-songwriter.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Everybody, I'm back. This is Kara Johnstad. You are at Voice Rising, and we are in studio today with Simran Kaur, and we were just talking about the beauty, actually, about the beauty of reflection, I would say, the beauty of putting our voice in a very natural place so that it can unfold and it can feel at home. And for singers out there, we were talking about reverb and being in cathedrals. And so, Simri, welcome back. Welcome
back. Thank you,
Farah. Yeah, here's to having very big voices. And I want to actually encourage everybody out there. I know Simrit has a wonderful course called the Supreme, is it called Supreme Sound?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And where you work a lot on tone and singing and breath work. And for everybody out there, I know that it's possible for our voices to be very big and strong as long as they're not pushed. It's like a small seed that needs to be consistently given attention and water and time and love and practice.
Yeah.
And so whether you have a big voice or a small voice, the idea of feeling at home in a cathedral-like space, if you don't have that at home, you can create that, right? We can create that with also with different tools, without microphones, but we might be happier singing in really literally in the shower, in the kitchen. If we have a fully carpeted room, it might not be the best for us to sing in. And so it might be good to find those spaces, to seek out those spaces. Yeah, that's my 2 cents worth on on beautiful sound and not being shy to have reverb in your system. That is not an effect for me. That is just common sense.
Yeah, I'm
really
with you on that. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Yeah, you know, I feel that it's just so important for people to use their voices, not only to be singers, because a lot of people don't want to be singers, but they want to use their voices. They want to enjoy the sound and the healing effect of their voice. And like mm-hmm. you said, it's a crucial part of our enjoyment of ourselves, and also it's a crucial part of getting to know ourselves is through our sound, through our genuine
right.
sound. And, you know, the voice really, and the reason that I love to chant these mantras so much is because they have an effect, a specific effect on the brain. They have an effect on the neurotransmission fluid in the brain. They actually change that chemistry. And with Gurmukhi, and I'm sure with other mantras as well, there's all these meridian points at the roof of the mouth. And when the tip of the mm-hmm. tongue is hitting these different meridian points, there's 84 different meridian points up there. They cause an effect in that neurotransmission fluid. It changes. The chemistry of it changes. And the, you know, the different glands in the body and the different, the hypothalamus is the first gland to really give the commands. And then it goes through the pineal to the pituitary gland, the master gland. And I mean, those glands dictate what's going on in the body, and the hypothalamus is going to release hormones. So it's like it's something that really, like for me, it's also scientific. It's not why I do it. The science isn't why I do it, but it's an interesting aspect of it, and it shows me that it's not just, oh, it's not just something that's like in my head. That it's a real thing that's happening. It's the science that's really happening. And when we chant, we put ourselves inside of a space where all this is happening naturally. We don't have to think about it. And all of a sudden, we put ourselves in a completely different space. We take ourselves out of the thinking space, which causes stress. And we put ourselves into a very natural state of stillness. So mm-hmm. where are the problems of our life, because we all experience the challenges of life, the things that we consider big problems seem to shrink. It doesn't mean they're not there, but our perspective of them changes, and we have a greater view. The window opens up, so to speak. We just have a greater view of who we really are, and that's a lot more simple than we think. And we get to really feel that, and then all of those other things don't seem as big of a deal as they do seem when we're in our thinking mind. It's like our mind just wants to magnify everything that we think about. That's its job. I mean, that's the job of the brain. So it's nice to be able to bypass that and really sit in a space of stillness and not be in the thinking mind all the time and not be in that state of stress, because it is a state of stress. And especially today in the world, with so much going on, there's so much confusion in the world today, and that we're being bombarded with so many pieces of information, and it's overwhelming, I know, for everybody, and it's really easy to want to tune out. But when we use the mantric technology, then it's such a practical and easy tool that brings us into a space where we can experience these feelings that we have. We can experience what's going on in the world. We can feel the energy of that. But it doesn't seem to have the same effect on us as it did when we were in the thinking mind. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Can you envision a world where we speak to each other in psalms and poems and sing to each other every day and uplift each other? And so that we find not only that peaceful place within, but also that we realize what a powerful tool we have also to shape shift our relationships and our friendships.
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Yes.
I'm looking at the clock. I would love to get the song in. I would love to share a few moments of this wonderful song that you shared with me, The Keeper, live. And I am assuming that you are the writer of the lyrics. Submit
yes.
to the storm, walk into the water, lay open the heart, let fear be the lover. A moon in the dark, in love with the forest, the keeper emerges, the secret before us. And it continues on. It's a beautiful, beautiful lyric, Simrit.
Thank you.
Shall we listen to a few moments?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Path Unforgotten, Simrit Kaur's song, The Keeper. You are here at Voice Rising. Simrit, how does developing our own voice help us to develop our own personal power?
Gosh, that's such a big question. But to answer it, I think in a simple way, the voice is really the sound of our soul. And the more that we develop our voice, the closer our connection with our intuition. And when we're in tune with our intuition, everyone has intuition, No one has a better intuition or stronger intuition than the other person. There's just some people are just more connected with their intuition. So the more that we're connected with the intuition, the more empowered that we are, because the more that we know ourselves, the more that we know that voice that lives inside of us, the more that we use our voices, whether we're a singer or not, doesn't matter. It's not about being a professional singer. It's about enjoying the sound of our own voice, because it puts us in a state of harmony. When we're able to enjoy the sound of our own unique voice, which was given to us as a specific key to unlock our joy, our healing, our happiness, and also our wisdom. When we really get to know the intuition, that's what happens. We become empowered. We know what is real and what is not real. We know what we need for ourselves. The list goes on and on, but I would say it's all about intuition and really getting to know ourselves in that way, and that's extremely powerful.
And it's very powerful.
Yeah, it is, and the soul has everything to do with that, and the voice is our connection with that, and it's the link. So it saddens me to hear that people don't use their voices. I mean, because they've been told they don't have a good voice, or they've been told to shut up, or whatever reason. But think about how amazing it feels to be able to sing in the shower, or to sing in the car, or to sing with a song that you like, or just to hum in the kitchen while you're cooking. I mean, it completely changes the space that you're in. I mean, it's an amazing gift and tool. And I encourage everyone to use their voice when they want to. It doesn't matter how it sounds. It matters how we relate with that sound and how we cultivate that sound. Because everybody has a different tone and timbre, and everybody has a different energetic to their voice. And I think it's really important for people to understand that, and to also really acknowledge that the voices that they've been given are unique to their biology, unique to their own path of healing. And one of my teachers told me that our voice is 100 times more powerful than anyone else's voice outside of us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's a reason for that.
I was saying it's like a biofeedback loop, right? Our voice is in our body. And so if we're putting out even something as simple as, can you get me a cup of coffee or a tea? Or if we're always not happy with that tone, then we're constantly giving that message to our body. Well, actually, I don't really like my voice. But if we can fall in love with our voice, that's a very easy thing. Then every word we speak, whether it's putting, whatever, it's going buying groceries or saying, picking your kid up at school, we're giving that beautiful vibration back to the world and back to ourselves. Mm. And that's... Yeah,
so
that's very beautiful. So what's your homepage so people can come and discover more about your music and about your teachings?
Thank you.
What's the best place?
Did you say homepage? Or?
Yeah, do you have a web presence?
Yes, I do.
KaurMusic.com,
SimritKaurMusic.com, and everything's on there, from the bio to the tour dates to information on courses and online academy that we have. It's a membership site. There's so much information on the website, so you can find all that there.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Simrit, for being with me today at Om Times Radio, for making this program possible. It's been a delight to explore mantra with you, and I hope to see you back, or hear you, be with you on the show very soon. Bye-bye.